From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. And we are at the beginning of what's expected to be an interesting year in Illinois politics, with expensive, rough political fights in both the primary and general elections. And those primaries, they're going to be happening on a different timeline than we're used to here in Illinois. Rather than being in March or February, as has been the norm for at least as long as I've been a voter, it was moved back to June. And that was in part to give the Democrats in Springfield more time to draw new legislative district boundaries for the state House and Senate, as well as for Illinois' representatives in Congress. And then there are the top-of-the-ticket races, of course, for governor and U.S. Senate. Joining me to preview the year in Illinois politics are two of my favorite political reporters. Amanda Vinicky is a correspondent with PBS station WTTW. You can see her reports on Chicago Tonight. Amanda, Happy New Year. Welcome back.
And Happy New Year to you as well, Brian. I like that. Favorite political reporters. I bet you say that to everybody, but I'm going to run with it.
We'll never know. And Rick Pearson is political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. Great way to start that new year.
Listeners, if you have a question or comment about Illinois politics, as ever, our phone lines are open, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What do you think about the landscape as we discuss campaigns for governor, Congress, state legislature, state Supreme Court, even, and other offices up and down the ticket? All right, let's begin with the campaign for governor. Amanda, J.B. Pritzker has announced his reelection bid. He's already running TV ads. I just got another notice, tens of thousands of dollars of cable ads this morning. What are some of his strengths and vulnerabilities heading into this election year?
Strengths, I think you hit on one right there, the fact that he's already up on air. And by the way, he doesn't have to worry about paying to keep that up through the summer. This is really pretty early for something like that, particularly given, of course, that he's got plenty of name recognition, given that he is the governor. So I would say he has, number one strength is a whole lot of money. Also, no primary battle at all for him. Democrats will be supporting him. So he's got that going. He has broader name recognition, perhaps, than ever. I mean, he's governor, so that's an easy one. But of course, through COVID for a while there, he was having daily press conferences that I know in Chicago, where a lot of his votes would come from, newscasts would, you know, break in the middle of coverage, and everybody was tuning in 2020 to what was getting announced on a daily basis when it came to dealing with this pandemic. That, of course, leads into some of his vulnerabilities, and that it is no longer 2020. Of course, everybody wants COVID to be in a distant memory, and it is not. And so there is, I think, a lot of frustration with this, and whether it is deserved or not, he certainly is wearing the jacket for a whole lot of that. And that is, I think, a key vulnerability for the governor at this point.
And Rick, I don't know if you have anything. Do you want to add to that, or if we want, we can flip over to the Republican side and talk about who are some of the top tier candidates there, where the pandemic is figuring into that list as well, isn't it?
Well, about Pritzker, I'd point out that when he announced his reelection, we were kind of on the good side of COVID, and that the trend numbers were looking good. And that was before the Delta variant.
And, hot vac summer, as they say, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, he was willing to embrace his role as a leader in bringing the state back. And as Amanda points out, everybody's tired of it. And of course, we've gone from the politicalization of masks to the politicalization of schools. And, you know, we're just seeing Chicago after 5 days of a teacher stoppage, basically, finally an agreement that the kids are coming back to the classroom on Wednesday. But you've got fights on local school boards over masking policies, parents that are kind of exasperated with, and truly it goes beyond the politics. It's just the parental, I think, issue of, you know, what's best for students. And not all the time has the guidance been all that clear despite the governor saying we're following the science. And so I do think there's some vulnerability over, you know, his handling of that, particularly, you know, I would say in the suburban areas, which is kind of shifted more Democratic, but is still very much a swing area. And the key demographic is suburban moms. And, you know, there's the issue of, yes, I want to keep the kids safe. I want the schools to be safe, but I want my kids to learn. And after losing basically that year to remote learning last year, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to take their temperature as they look at this governor's race.
And speaking of safety, Rick, just before we move on to the GOP, because I do expect that Republican candidates are going to be giving voice to another potential vulnerability that thus far Pritzker has really sort of evaded, and that is the explosion of crime, or at least the perceived explosion of crime in the city of Chicago, something that is worrisome as well to those key suburban mom voters. And so not just to city residents, where, of course, there were some major criminal justice packages that the governor signed into law and heralded. And at this point, it doesn't, I think, particularly matter or give assurance to folks who are concerned about that, that there is a spike in crime in other metropolitan areas in the United States. They're scared. And the question will be, is this going to be something that Pritzker, you know, proclaims and owns and says this is going to be for the long-term health of Illinois, these criminal justice changes, or will instead Republicans effectively say and point fingers at Democrats, including the governor, for signing into law measures that really, again, are even just starting to take effect, but not doing enough to deal with crime? It's something that really thus far has, I think, been hurt Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. But that's, again, we're not in campaign season yet. We could very quickly see that be something that the governor is more continuously asked about.
Yeah, and the pandemic and the spike in crime we've seen in the last couple of years have certainly seems to have brought about the end, or at least put in jeopardy, this emerging bipartisan consensus we'd seen on criminal justice issues. And I think, as Amanda said, Rick, we can expect Republican candidates to take advantage of that, or to try to, you know, talk about that as an issue and make public safety something that they campaign on. What is your view of the Republican field of candidates so far, right? Darren Bailey, downstate state senator, perhaps best known for being a loud anti-mask person. He was actually removed from the House, makeshift House chamber and a convention center at one point for refusing to wear a mask. Gary Rabin, a businessman who is, talked up lawsuits about the vax mandates and things like that, opposing them. Paul Schimpf, Jesse Sullivan, take it where you will, Rick.
Well, I think we still don't know what the Republican landscape is for governor. I mean, we know that behind the scenes, you've got Ken Griffin, the wealthiest man in Illinois, has been encouraging efforts to have a slate of strong candidates run. Michael Irvin, Richard Irvin, the mayor of Aurora, is being looked at as a governor candidate on that kind of a slate. Tom Demmer announced, a Republican state rep from Dixon, announced for state treasurer. He's part of that. New Secretary of State candidate, John Milhauser from Sangamon County, part of that slate. So, I mean, it's obvious that some of the leading Republicans in the state of the establishment don't think that anybody in the current field is strong enough to take the fight to J.B. Pritzker, given some of the various baggage that they have. I mean, you pointed out about Darren Bailey and his, issues of being, you know, a downstate anti-vaxxer. You've got Gary Rabin, who is very much in the Trump camp, is close friends with the former president's son, hosted a fundraiser for him. He's trying to appeal to that audience, as he also decries vaccine mandates. Jesse Sullivan is kind of the whiteboard candidate, since he's new. Nobody knows exactly who he is or what he stands for. And I kind of liken him to Bruce Rauner in his first campaign. It was like he's kind of the candidate that Republicans can paint whatever aspiration they want on him, and then we'll see what happens. And Paul Schimpf, who, you know, one time ran against Lisa Madigan for attorney general, he's, I would say, perhaps one of the more thoughtful Republicans in this crowd. But at the same time, it's questionable whether he will actually have the resources to be able to compete.
Yeah, and I will say, speaking of ads airing already, it's not just Pritzker. Jesse Sullivan, I admit to being one of these Hallmark Christmas movie aficionados, especially when you're feeling down. A fake, snowy, beautiful world will really cheer a gal up. And Jesse Sullivan was evidently trying to reach folks like me, because he, through the Christmas season, was on air with some introductory campaign ads on Hallmark.
So he's the Hallmark candidate?
He's the Hallmark candidate, or a wannabe. I do think, Rick, it's interesting because while he is sort of this blank slate like Rauner had, we knew a lot more about Rauner. And by the way, Rauner had a lot more money. Sullivan has come in with some out-of-state contributions, but certainly does not have the Chicago business community behind him like Rauner did. It gets back to your initial point in that there is very much an expectation that the Republican field is not yet settled, because I think there are a lot of agitators in Illinois who are dissatisfied with how things are going, that want an alternative to the progressive route, and don't believe that any of the candidates thus far, Sullivan is not their man.
And it stands to reason, though. I mean, if you have this field that remains this crowded, you could have somebody getting through with just 20% of the vote, right? And Amanda, this is, I mean, there's an old story in Illinois politics, as long as you and I have been covering it, and probably Rick too, of the moderates versus the more, you know, the so-called true conservatives, as they see themselves.
Right. And so, but a primary is a very different thing than a general election. And that, I think, is going to be the hill that whatever candidate is going to have to climb. Just because you've made it to the, I mean, I don't know if a marathon, that's kind of a tired analogy, but you got to go with it. I've ran a half marathon. That is doable. I've never run a marathon. That, to me, is a goal that I am not willing to commit to. And that is something that I think each of these candidates are going to have to contend with. It is a different sort of training, a different sort of a goal, but you can't get to the finish line unless you meet that initial mark, and vice versa. So I do think certainly there is a lot of conservative movement and those on the right who really back Bailey and like what he has done. But if he is to be the GOP nominee, I think Democrats would be, I mean, they'd be whistling, and Pritzker would get to keep more of his billions, because he would be far less worried, I think, about having any sort of true opponent through the general election were Bailey to be the GOP nominee.
And Brian, don't forget that, you know, those fights between moderates and conservatives of the past, the Republican Party has recalibrated. And so it's almost, you know, the Trump Party and more moderate, not Trump. And you're seeing that the conservative pro-Trump voice is definitely becoming more of a majority voice in this party. So there's a lot of identity finding for Republicans as they approach this governor's race. And as I pointed out, that's why Rabine has gone hard to the Trump side. He says he's not smart enough to know who won the 2020 election. He's a board member of Turning Point USA, a controversial group that tries to bring youth into hard right conservatism. Each of these candidates are trying to find a proper Republican identity to try to win. And you're right. In the end, it could maybe only take 15% to win a primary.
Wow. 15%. All right. Well, that is something we're going to continue to follow. We need to take a break in about a minute and a half here. But Amanda, before we do, we'll talk about congressional races when we come back. But Amanda, is there anything General Assembly wise you're keeping an eye on in about a minute or less?
Everything. We haven't had too much action because of Omicron. The General Assembly has canceled what was supposed to be this really front-loaded session. They've got a goal to wrap things up far earlier than normal because of that summer primary that you noted, Brian. And we will get the governor's budget address introduced about a month from now, in the beginning of February. So at this point in time, really watching for what that budget proposal will be. And as I noted earlier, also crime, the Speaker of the House, sure, Emanuel Chris Welch, has noted that that's something that may be revisited.
And that's policy-wise. But politically, though, I mean, we're not expecting, no matter how the elections go this year, not expecting major changes in the Democratic control of the General Assembly, right?
No major changes, though. Of course, this is a new map, and it is one that was designed by Democrats to be advantageous. So a tough time likely for Republicans in these newly drawn districts.
All right. We're going to continue the conversation with Amanda Vinicky of WTTW and Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune when we come back. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us, that's 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Rick Pearson, political reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and Amanda Vinicky, correspondent for Chicago Tonight on PBS affiliate WTTW in Chicago. That's a lot of Chicagos in there. We are talking, though, about politics across the state of Illinois. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. And we spent the first part of our conversation talking about the gubernatorial campaign. Let's turn now to Congress, which is another expected flashpoint this year. And we'll begin with downstate Congressman Rodney Davis. He spent his first decade there running in a district drawn to be competitive for Democrats, though they consistently failed to beat him. But now the Republican has been put into a much more conservative district. One analysis I saw had it as R plus 42. And he had already made what's become the sort of typical Republican journey toward Trump. After the Access Hollywood video came out right before the 2016 election, Davis actually withdrew his endorsement, urged Trump to drop out of the race. But a few years later, in 2019, Davis was flying on Air Force One and being name-checked as an ally of the president. Let's listen to a clip about it's going to have the president and then how Davis explained his, evolution to me back in 2019.
We're also glad to have with us Representatives Rodney Davis, Mike Boss, and Darren LaHood. These are warriors. Where are they? Where are they? The three of them. They're warriors for us, for all of us. They're warriors. Thank you.
I've gotten to know him better, know him personally. I like the president personally. I look forward to working with him on a regular basis and his administration. And I look forward to campaigning for his reelection because I think the results are astounding.
Well, it seems that the feeling is not mutual because after all that, the former president chose to endorse freshman Representative Mary Miller, who then turned around and announced she would challenge Davis in a primary. She had been drawn out of that district, but of course you don't have to live in the district you want to run in Congress. So, Rick, what do you make of all that?
Kind of an interesting evolution here and you know, the way, obviously, we've got redrawn districts. We lost a congressional seat due to population loss. And Davis was given a perfectly safe district. And the way the borders were drawn, it was about, looks like about a three wood from Mary Miller's home in Oakland. And so rather than take on Mike Bost, where she was mapped in with him, she's decided to jump that 300 yards and go to over to Rodney Davis's district. She is very controversial. She is with the MTG crowd. She really embraces the most right of the hard right in the Republican caucus, the Freedom Caucus. And I'm just not sure in that 15th district, that new 15th, it is Republican, as you pointed out, but I'm not sure it is that hard line Republican as a further downstate district might be. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, how her attitudes play. You know, one of her first days, she gave a speech to a women's group and said Hitler was right in talking about political indoctrination of kids. And was forced to apologize. I mean, she'd been in office a few days and people were already calling for her resignation. So it's going to be interesting to see how she plays in this district that is going to be, it's not only, you know, some great new territory that Rodney Davis has to deal with, but certainly a lot of new territory for Mary Miller. I mean, the district stretches from the Mississippi to the Indiana border.
Interestingly, Democrats are using Mary Miller as campaign fodder, or at least campaign fundraising. They are trying to, like I said, bring in money by saying, hey, look who's running. So just sort of, I'm not sure that's particularly relevant to the race at all, other than showing really how controversial a figure she is and how Democrats are building her up to be. Also, just noting that in some would say that the district, it was really designed for Rodney. Again, maybe too Republican, and that could end up hurting him. Perhaps we don't yet really know that dynamic, and National Eyes, I think, will be, this will be among the national races that people will be looking at to see what a Trump endorsement does and how much Trump will do for Mary Miller there. But just one note that some believe and perceive that the district was intentionally drawn to keep Davis out of the governor's race, in part so that that wouldn't be something that Pritzker would have to worry about in terms of a moderate GOP candidate.
Yeah, and I'm, Rick, you've written that, that Davis already locked up, what, 32 out of the 35 county chairmen? That was as of, I think, your story on Miller's announcement a couple weeks ago. I mean, as you said, it's not necessarily the same as a downstate district, but boy, the Republican Party sure has gone a long way toward Trump. So it'll be interesting to see what the voters do, I guess.
Yeah, and when you look at, I mean, when Davis got those endorsements, that was before Trump had endorsed Mary Miller, and Mary Miller hadn't even decided to say where she was going to run until after she had gotten the Trump endorsement. So all these things are playing out, but. I mean, Rodney's been in the game for a long time in a variety of roles, even before Congress, as part of the Republican establishment. And he's well known, he's well liked among Republicans. And I think truly Mary Miller almost comes at this as almost kind of an outsider, given where her base of support traditionally has been.
Yeah, and he's close with Steve Scalise in Washington. Okay, I'm probably getting a little too far in the weeds here. We do have a caller on the line, 800-222-9455. Karma Lynn is calling in from Urbana. Thanks for the call. Karma, are you with us? Okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, she is. Okay, great.
I have to turn my phone off or on or do something. I wondered, I've been listening to Adam Kinziger's interview with Margaret Hooper talking about his new direction in terms of working with extremist groups, that he talks about the Turning Point USA and trying to work with the public health agenda, I suppose it must be, or is it a public policy agenda through universities? In any case, I don't mean to ramble into the weeds either, but can someone address, is it the role of a politician, or is it the role of public affairs at a university or public health?
Sure.
Whose role is it to work with youth? Mary Miller has her opinion, Bailey's on Turning Point. Adam Kinziger seems to be moving towards like the Millennial Action Project direction, or I'm not sure where he's moving. But can someone address why are politicians taking on the mental health narrative for youth. So I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you for the call, Rick. Maybe you can just talk about, I don't know if you want to, if you follow what the caller was saying there about, you know, politicians trying to, I guess, reach young people and maybe turn them away from the sort of pro-Trump direction that young conservatives have taken. And you know, what Kinzinger's decision, he's not going to seek re-election in Congress, and now he's not seeking statewide office either.
Right. And, you know, Kinzinger, being one of the few anti-Trump voices in the House Republicans in Washington who announced he's not seeking re-election. The Democratic mapmakers drew him into a district with Darren LaHood, and LaHood is strongly pro-Trump. And, you know, the LaHood name resonates for decades, and it's a district that Kinzinger would not have had a chance in. Kinzinger had floated running for statewide office, and I think he knows where the trend lines are among Republicanism statewide. And he had previously announced this kind of country first political action movement and said that rather than running for political office, he's going to be trying to use that as a springboard to not only try to encourage candidates who are not recognizing Trump as the de facto leader of the Republican Party, but also to try to do more of this, you know, restoring Republicans to what they once were as a party rather than focusing on grievances and the big lie. And you know, as the caller mentioned, you know, Turning Point USA, again, Gary Rabine is the governor candidate, is on the board of that, has turned into very much of a strong conservative influence on campuses. And truly, it goes to what Mary Miller was trying to say, if she had perhaps said it without having to cite the leader of the Holocaust. You know, that you know, the youth movement is very strong, and there is a battle for young minds.
You know, in terms of the caller, in terms of who takes ownership, and I think the caller particularly noted caring and worrying about the mental health of youth, not just their political activism, but really where they're at. And I guess it's incumbent, yes, certainly upon public health officials and our government. But maybe I don't know if Kinzinger well, or really what his motivations are, if it's recognizing that there's really no other option for him politically at this point in time. And so it's seizing on opportunity, or if it's also really caring and motivated by the notion that you want to spur people to be politically active, particularly if they are the youth and could change the direction of a party that he clearly doesn't believe is going in the right path as it moves toward Trumpism. Combining that as well with when he talks about, I think he phrases it as toxic tribalism, and how that can feed into a whole lot more in the direction of the country. I mean, I think we as political reporters, it is politics, but you have to tie that, of course, to the decisions that politicians make from a public policy level, and covering, again, this strike or action, the work action that had children out of school this past week in Chicago, the mental health issues from that, and even some of the rhetoric that was used on the part of both union leaders and the mayor, that I know I speak with a lot of parents who say, hey, wait, what is this teaching our children as the battle over their education takes place? Some of the name calling.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave this conversation there. Fortunately, no name calling here. With
Amanda Vinicky. Positive name calling. You guys are great.
Amanda Vinicky from WTTW and Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune. Lots of races we're going to continue to watch. Will U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth get a strong opponent? Marie Newman, Sean Kasten in the suburbs. We'll talk about these things in the weeks ahead. Amanda, Rick, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.